Welcome to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown, and today I have the real great pleasure to have Robert Lacey on the line today to talk about his new book, Pragmatic Conservatism, Edmund Burke and His American Heirs, published by Palgrave Macmillan. Bob, how are you doing today?
I'm great. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, such a pleasure to have read a book which I imagine when you began it didn't have the timeliness that it ultimately has had, which we'll talk about. But before that, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure.
Where you are now and what you've done in the past.
Well, I teach at Iona College, which is in New Rochelle, New York. It's a suburb of the city. I've been teaching there for 10 years. And this is my second book. My first book, which was based on my dissertation, is called American Pragmatism and Democratic Faith, which is a study of the connection between pragmatism, that the school of philosophy, and participatory democratic thought in the 20th century. And then this new book, in some ways, builds on that. It occurred to me when I was teaching Edmund Burke at Iona to honor students that there was something very pragmatic about Burke, the father of conservatism. And in a way, he was a proto-pragmatist. And so that's in part why I decided to call his brand of conservatism pragmatic conservatism. And that's why I developed such an interest in his mode of thought.
Yeah, that's great. And obviously, it's become very timely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on some level, every conservative claims to be a Burkean.
Yes.
But is it right to say that many don't know exactly what that means? How do you see the current view of Edmund Burke compared to your reading, your interpretation? What's the conflict here between what we think of as conservatism or movement conservatism and your reading of the kind of father of conservatism?
Sure. Well, I think that a lot of conservative intellectuals will claim that they are descendants of Burke. In a way, they have to, because if they're going to accept the moniker of conservatism, and then they have to claim that they are the descendants of this man who's generally recognized as the father or the godfather. And I think movement conservatives, whether they acknowledge it or not, privately, I don't know, but they have to pretend that they're heirs to Burke when they're clearly not. And I think one of the main differences between, in my book, I go into this in a lot more detail, but I think the real main difference is that conservatives today are ideologues, and they adhere to abstract principles that they think are unwavering and absolute. And they're decidedly not pragmatic. They don't think that our political truths are provisional. They don't think that we should arrive at political solutions by drawing on concrete experience. Whereas Edmund Burke, and I think thinkers who follow in his path, believe that, politics is not about adhering to abstract principles or creating theoretical blueprints to which you adhere slavishly. And so, I think that's the big difference. Now, movement conservatives, I think in that sense, have proven themselves to be radical. And as I argue in the book, and I think other critics have made similar claims, that movement conservatives actually have more in common with the Jacobins, right, the French revolutionaries, those people whom Burke criticized so severely than they do with Burke himself, because they're just as inflexible and uncompromising as the Jacobins. And they're willing to even adopt a scorched earth policy, right, to realize their utopian dreams, if you will. And that, to me, just goes completely against what Edmund Burke's thought was about and what he was calling for. And that's why, in a strange way, that today's liberals, or sort of moderate liberals, or those who we call liberals, have more in common with Burke, and perhaps they're the true descendants of Burke, not today's conservatives.
Now, as you've already done a little bit of, and you include in your title, Pragmatic Conservatism, I wonder if you could just kind of give us the real specific definition of what you mean when you refer to pragmatic conservatism, and how much of this is an interpretation of Burke, and how much of this would be something Burke would have viewed in his own writing. Take us to that very specific term, pragmatic conservatism.
Sure. So, first of all, my take on what pragmatic conservatism is comes from Burke, an interpretation of Burke. Whether if we resurrected Burke, he would agree completely with my interpretation, I'm not so sure. But I think that he would be he'd be fairly comfortable with it, because I don't think I'm saying anything about Burke that's that controversial. So what I argue in the book is that pragmatic conservatives, who again, in many ways, either consciously or unconsciously, are borrowing from Burke's thought, subscribe to five main tenets. The first one is that pragmatic conservatives believe that human nature is sinful, that human beings are flawed, they're naturally acquisitive, greedy, oftentimes aggressive to realize their selfish. Some Burkean conservatives like Reinhold Niebuhr, and we can talk about him in a little bit, use the language of original sin. Certainly Burkean conservatives who are Christian would use that kind of language. So that they start off with this view that human nature is flawed, and we can't expect that any kind of education can lead to the perfectibility, or the perfection, I should say, of human beings. The second tenet, it kind of flows from the first, which is that if human beings are flawed, if they're sinful by nature, that we need traditions, time-honored and time-tested traditions to restrain the darker impulses of human beings. And so our reverence for tradition becomes vital to ensure social harmony, and to maintain a stable political order. The third tenet suggests that yes, we may have a reverence for tradition, but we don't want to adhere to tradition slavishly. That there needs to be an acceptance that in a world that's changing, in a dynamic world, we have to accept reform, incremental change. And in part, the reason why we need reform and change is to preserve those very traditions that we cherish so much. And Burkeans and pragmatic conservatives make this distinction between reform and innovation. Reform is good, innovation is bad. Innovation is changing too much too quickly. The fourth tenet is an epistemological claim. And this is where I think pragmatic conservatives sound a lot like pragmatists, like John Dewey or William James. They're wary of absolute truth claims. They're wary of those people who are certain that they know what the truth is. And especially in the world of politics, right? Those people who are so certain about the truth that they're willing to engage in bold political experiments or to make apologies for the status quo. Those are the people that Burkean conservatives are wary of. So they call for an epistemological humility, I guess, because they see truth as provisional. They see truth as grounded in experience, not something that you can arrive at through abstract reasoning. So that's the fourth tenet. And the fifth one, there's clearly a strong element of elitism among Burkean or pragmatic conservatives. They believe that elites, political elites, intellectual elites, cultural elites, serve as the guardians of tradition, and they're the ones who make sure that this fragile edifice of wayward or flawed human beings and flexible traditions and provisional truths doesn't collapse into a heap of chaos and relativism. So those are the five ingredients. And so I saw those as being the main sort of ideas to get out of Burke. And then what I saw is that his intellectual heirs in 20th century American political thought, and that includes Walter Lippmann, Reinhold Niebuhr, and Peter Viereck, are the three whom I profile, they share these ideas. And all of them, by the way, grew to see themselves as Burkeans. So Viereck always saw himself as a Burkean. The other two, I think, more evolved towards a Burkeanism as their thought matured.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. Yeah. You compare Burke to Walter Lippmann.
Yep.
Not someone that a casual observer would associate with conservatism, but you show that Lippmann himself viewed himself that way. Help us first understand who Lippmann was and how some of his changing views link him to Burke and conservatism.
Yeah, and people, it's funny. Walter Lippmann was a towering figure in his lifetime, but he's largely forgotten. People kind of remember his name, but he was a journalist who came of age in the Progressive Era. Went to Harvard University, studied with George Santayana and William James, and in fact he considered a career in philosophy, but decided that he wanted to become a journalist and a political commentator. By the 1920s, he became a well-regarded and well-known political columnist. And from the 1920s until he retired in the late 60s, he was a political columnist whose articles were being read, throughout the country. So he, of course, through much of his career, was known as part of the liberal establishment. He believed in sort of modest expansions of the welfare state. He, for the most part, supported the New Deal, although there were times when he was critical of it. But he was certainly supportive of an active government to provide economic security. He was also kind of considered a realist in terms of foreign policy. He was certainly not an isolationist. He thought America should use its military power and economic power abroad to protect its interests. Generally speaking, we think of him as a liberal who at the end of his career opposed the Vietnam War, much to the chagrin of Lyndon Johnson. Again, someone who supported the welfare state. So on the surface, why would we call him a conservative, right? I mean, certainly his contemporaries didn't see him as a conservative. But at the end of his career, I kind of start off the chapter talking about this. At the end of his career, in fact, he was retired and he was being interviewed for an article that I think was published in the New Republic. He said, hey, I see myself as a Burkean conservative, and I think I've always been a Burkean conservative. I'm not a William F. Buckley conservative, but I think I'm a Burkean conservative. And so, essentially, what I do in the Lippmann chapter is I suggest that Lippmann got himself right, that his self-evaluation was pretty much spot on, despite the appearance of being a liberal. And of course, by the way, this speaks to a larger point that I make about Burkean conservatism. It's not an ideology. It's more of an intellectual disposition. So therefore, you can be a conservative and be a liberal at the same time. That those are categories that are not they're mutually exclusive. And in fact, you can even have a conservative philosophical temperament and gravitate to socialist solutions if you think that socialist policies may serve to conserve traditions and conserve those institutions that you think are essential for the social and political order. And so there's this kind of flexibility that a Burkean conservative should have. And I think that Lippmann embodies that because he really did change his views over time in response to the problems that America faced. And, he had a long and distinguished career. And so, he started writing as a young man before World War I started and finished his career when the Vietnam War was at its sort of darkest period. And, to me, he really embodied this kind of Burkean conservatism And like Burke, by the way, he wasn't just a thinker and a writer, but he was somebody who was responding to the events of his time, not just somebody hiding in the ivory tower. And I think that that's true of all of the figures that I focus on here. The Burkean conservative the pragmatic conservative is practical, is grounded in what's going on in the real world.
As you have noted, you also compare Burke to Niebuhr and to Peter Viereck, mm-hmm. which I think make the book very interesting in so many different ways. But in the interest of time, I wonder if we can end our conversation just with a bit of a reflection about what you think your findings and this book say about our current moment. Is there any way to use what you've discovered, what you're arguing in this book, to make sense of our current political moment, where Republican Party is on the ascent, is conservatism as well, is pragmatic conservatism on the ascent? Just briefly, maybe you can offer us some thoughts on that.
Well, I think that the Trump victory suggests that it's not. I mean, I don't know if Trump is a conservative by any definition. He's certainly not a Burkean conservative, and I don't think he fully fits the mold of movement conservatism either. And so it's hard to know what's going to happen. But I do think that movement conservatism, Trump, or this kind of populist conservatism, that these two brands are fly in the face of Burkean conservatism. Again, it's radical. They have no. You see, Trump. He has no respect for tradition. He has no respect for the facts. He has no respect for intellectuals. He has no respect for established institutions. The establishment generally, right? Whereas I think Burkean or pragmatic conservatives do have a respect for the establishment and are wary of discarding, established institutions and traditions wholesale. And he's eager to do it. But perhaps the Trump moment will create an opportunity for a more responsible conservatism to emerge. But in the end, if you ask, is there a vibrant Burkean conservatism? I mean, I guess I could say yes, and to the extent that it exists among the liberal establishment. The problem is that not many people are acknowledging the liberal establishment as conservative. But I think that we should. I'm not the only one to suggest this. I mean, even Arthur Schlesinger, Adlai Stevenson, these notable liberal establishment figures from the middle to the sort of late 20th century saw an element of Burkean conservatism and what they represented. And part of what I'm hoping to do here in the book is to just kind of, give the readers a view of a forgotten tradition in American political thought, and say here are the real Burkean conservatives, and then throw in stark relief movement conservatism and show really just how radical it is and how out of step it is with the history of Western political thought, that's what I'm trying to do with the book, and hopefully if people pick it up, they'll be and read it, they'll be persuaded.
Yeah, the book is so interesting. And the title is Pragmatic Conservatism, Edmund Burke and His American Heirs. Robert Lacey is the author. Palgrave Macmillan is the publisher. Bob, thank you so much for your time today.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, Steve.